Hey guys, welcome to the Football Diary podcast once again. Thanks for joining us on a week where we lost one of football's most loved characters, really. Gianluca Vialli died at the tragic age of 58. The Chelsea legend will be remembered by many of us for different reasons and for different stages of his career. For me personally, I remember him in the 90s, just tearing it up in Serie A. I've got Miles and Dave with me today. Guys, really sad news, I think, for all of us. But Miles, what do you remember of Vialli in particular?
Yeah, obviously, you know, my love of Italian football, and what better character than someone like Gianluca Vialli, who actually was one of the first real exports we had into England as well, in terms of foreign players coming over to this country. He was a huge name in the Premier League at that time, and a really successful career at every club he was at. He was so close to achieving ridiculous glory at Sampdoria, only to go on and get it for Juventus. And yeah, someone that really set an example for what an Italian forward could be, and particularly in this country. We saw a lot of really nice, fluid football from Italian players that followed him, like Zola coming in and Di Canio. But Vialli really set the benchmark and continued throughout his career to just be a wonderful professional. I saw footage the other day of him and Mancini's embrace after the Euros final, and there'd be a big part of me as an English fan still kind of bitter about that. And then you see that, you just think, it's beautiful for him. Played together up front.
Yeah, it was.
Lifted that trophy together. I'm glad that he had that moment before we left him, of course. It's really, really sad news. And it seems quite common in football at the moment. We had Pele last week that we talked about, obviously. Maradona last year, and Vialli already now. It's really upsetting.
Yeah, I think he's the guy that will be remembered as an absolute gentleman as well. He did quite a lot of punditry work, and I think he, for the younger generation, they'll probably remember seeing him talking eloquently about football in the last few years. So yeah, Dave Vialli, you must remember a lot of his time at Chelsea. I think that's when most English fans all sort of remember him fondly for, weren't they?
Yeah, it's a gutting one, really. Just such a lovable guy, and you know, I think a lot of people probably remember him being on Football Italia as well. When he was on there, and kind of the insight that he was able to offer coming from his background and obviously being around football and, you know, playing and obviously in the coaching, whereas obviously Miles, that video that obviously came onto social media is blowing up of him hugging Mancini was just spine tingling, really, and kind of the emotions that gives you, and just watching it and just really, really sad. And like you mentioned there, obviously he's a lot of people forget about his coaching career, short coaching career in Chelsea, and obviously the success that he had in that as well. And he's a real, you know, legend of the club. And a lot of people, probably even me, really, I was very young, kind of obviously around that time. But it speaks a lot that, you know, I remember a lot of him as a player and a coach back then, and just a really sad time for football.
Loved the volley as well, didn't
he? Yeah.
And that's the best kind of goal.
He did, so. Yeah. And he brought silverware to Chelsea as well for a long time and a while. And I think it's probably fitting that we talk about the FA Cup on this podcast today, just because that's something he brought back to Chelsea in 2000 for the first time in a long, long time. So, yeah, this podcast is dedicated to Vialli. Really sad loss to football. I'm going to have to dive straight in with the biggest shock of the FA Cup, first of all, in my opinion, was just the result between Stevenage and Aston Villa. Now, I know you're going to want to avoid this like the plague, Miles, but what happened? What a capitulation. I mean, Stevenage would be absolutely thrilled with the win, but Villa threw it away at the end of the day, didn't they?
Yeah, there's so many layers to unpick here. It's a competition that Villa have struggled in massively. We've not qualified from the third round of the FA Cup since 2016 now. And bear in mind, we reached the final in the 15-16 season. So it's just shocking how poor we've been in this tournament. And it's really frustrating for me because we've brought in a manager who's got an amazing pedigree in cup competitions. He's obviously won the Europa League four times. He won domestic trophies with PSG. Villa really should have seen the FA Cup as an opportunity. We are mid-table right now. We're not going to get much higher than that. We're not going to finish much lower than that. This could have been our season. And you start with what should be a comfortable win, and they treated it like it was that before they played the game. And that's really, really dangerous. We rested players, obviously. And I go back and forth over whether I think that's acceptable or not at this stage in the competition. I understand that you've got a deep squad, you want to give people opportunities, and you should be the favourites against the League Two team. But it killed any momentum that we built. There are a lot of players that aren't in the starting 11 right now because they are simply not good enough at this club, and they let us down massively. And credit to Stevenage for taking their chances at the end of the game. But this isn't even a story of, well, Stevenage defended so well and they contained Villa. Villa were just terrible. They were absolutely awful. All the attacking talent that we had on the pitch, and it could do nothing. It was embarrassing.
It's an FA Cup third round upset waiting to happen when you do something like that, when you rest players. But Villa have been in good form, so I can see why Emery wanted to shuffle the pack, see what his players are made of in the squad. I think he found out, didn't you?
Yeah, and January was already going to be an interesting opportunity for Emery. It's going to end up being a lot busier now if he has his way. Imagine now, the season's done. That's the saddest thing about it. The season's done for us now because we will just finish mid-table. So he will probably just wait till the summer to rebuild this squad. But he saw firsthand yesterday that people talk about Villa like they've got really good depth. They should have for the money they've spent. Our depth is terrible. It's absolutely awful, the majority of it. If you look at some of the players that came in, do we really think that Jan Bednarek was a good signing? Terrible. Callum Chambers is a good squad player in terms of his versatility to cover an injury. He's not pulling up trees, though. Robin Olsen is an awful goalkeeper. I can't wait for him to not be Villa's backup. He's terrible. Den Donker, I said it at the time, it was the least inspiring signing we could have possibly made, and it was Gerrard panicking on deadline day. Okay, I want another player. Who am I going to get? In case we lost Louise, basically. And he proved, again, he's got his opportunity in the team, and he fell asleep. He absolutely fell asleep and just took the whole thing for granted. And you look at that forward line, you got Coutinho in there, who, what, 5 years ago, 6 years ago, went to Barcelona for 130 million. And he's playing League Two opposition. And all he could do was shoot from 30 yards and miss the target five times. Bailey has real potential. I think he's a wonderful footballer on his day. But I've never seen a footballer fall over and swing and miss at a football as much as Leon Bailey does. And that is the most frustrating thing in the world. Danny Ings looks off it, which is frustrating because he literally scored in the game before this. So he thought it was an opportunity for him to pick up some momentum and prove himself. Emery must look at that and go, I probably need 10 players. I probably need to turn my first 11 into my squad depth and bring in a whole new level of quality if I want to achieve anything in Europe. Because that's Villa's aim. It's so disappointing.
So with this result, it's probably unfair to take everything away from Stevenage because, I mean, they capitalised on a sloppy display in the second half, in the final third, if you like, of the game, and a ridiculous red card. I mean, what was Den Donker thinking, Dave? I mean, that's just madness. It's suicide with, what, 5 minutes left on the clock?
Yeah, I mean, the red card obviously is bad in itself, but then obviously to stop for a penalty as well is obviously not the best result. And I don't know whether it was inside the box. I mean, you could have gone either way, really. The fact it kind of continued into the box. So whether you say the foul was outside or inside, it's 50-50 probably for me. But yeah, just brainless, really. And yeah, as Miles mentioned, the goalkeeping, I feel like I should be doing better. It was a great power on the strike, but I just think he should have got down a little bit quicker, especially how far the player was out as well.
He's played in the league recently twice because Emi Martinez was out. You have to bring Emi Martinez in for this game because at the end of the day, I understand having a cup goalkeeper, but Martinez hasn't played that much for Villa since the World Cup. This is the perfect time for him to get minutes. And if Martinez is in goal, we go through because he's way more likely to save the penalty. We know that. We've seen it. I'm not saying he definitely would have. It was a really well-taken penalty. But he definitely saves the second one. It's absolutely ridiculous to get beaten at your near post because you're napping in the last minute when everything is on the line now. If you watch that move and said a team has scored here and there's one team that's Premier League and one team that's 59 places below them in the pyramid, you absolutely swap it around because it was just naive play. And I think having a leader like Emi Martinez to organise his defence, he probably doesn't pass the ball to Den Donker in the first place in that instance, so we don't concede the penalty. And he definitely saves the shot for the second one. And Emery will regret that. But I don't really shoulder the blame on him. You've got 11 players on that pitch that should all be able to affect the game. against the League Two team, and none of them looked good enough. Morgan Sanson took his goal well. Douglas Luiz's involvement was good
definitely.
At times. Of course, we expect that from him. But the rest of them, no one showed Emery that they should be in the Premier League starting 11 in place of someone else next week. Absolutely not.
So what's your feeling about the rumours that there's a bit of a rift between Emery and Emi Martinez? Because they've obviously been manager and player before at Arsenal, and he let Martinez go. Do you think there's any ill feeling there?
I hope not, no. I saw a few people kind of suggesting that, and it's been some sort of theory that's gone around. But at the end of the day, if you're taking over a club like Villa and you're trying to get them to the next level, you've got to rely on the world-class players you've got. And whatever relationship Emery and Martinez had, that was, what, 4 or 5 years ago now? And Martinez has come on leaps and bounds since then. All of a sudden, he's in the top three goalkeepers in the world, in my opinion. So I think that's kind of water under a bridge. And I think they'll probably move on from that. And Emery will just appreciate that that's one area of the squad he doesn't really need to strengthen except for a backup and someone to push Martinez more. Because he must have watched that and thought, from everything he's seen of Olsen, I know we got a clean sheet against Spurs and he played in that game. Other than that, I think he was conceding the goal at a rate of every 20 minutes. It's just ludicrous. That depth that we have, we've got Augustinsson, who looked bright against Wolves, and then in this game did absolutely nothing. The centre-back pairing was just, I just think it's really, really disappointing that that's the step down we have. I know we've got players to come back, like Diego Carlos, and that gives us more options, but yeah, it's that squad needs so much work. A lot of it is still championship level.
Well, a bit of a reality check for Unai Emery, I think. After a positive start, he's actually seen some of the true colours of his squad, which has got to be a good thing. But congratulations to Stevenage, nonetheless, for their progress. Another manager who's still sussing out his squad, I think, is Julian Lopetegui at Wolves, who should have beaten Liverpool. It was a 2-2 draw, so they're going to a replay. But for somebody who didn't watch this game, Miles, how would you sum up Liverpool's performance?
Oh, that's an interesting question, because there were moments of excellence, definitely. Got to start off, because you know how critical I love to be of some players, and definitely Liverpool players. Let's start off with massive praise for Darwin Nunez and the way he took his goal. That was phenomenal. Trent doing what Trent does best, playing a beautiful ball into the box. And the instinct of Nunez, I think, speaks massively about his character as well. Because he's had people on his back for weeks talking about how he's probably a flop, he can't hit a barn door. The way you take that finish, you have to be confident in able to hit a ball like that and to watch it and hit it first time. That's brilliant. And Liverpool will be really encouraged by that. And of course, Trent getting an assist for him, there was this whole campaign around that. And you remember when he signed, Trent sent that tweet out. They want to see that be successful. So in that moment, we saw the best of Liverpool. We also saw the problem with Liverpool this season, though. They look shaky at the back. And actually, very, very fortunate to still be in this competition. And we talk about Villa's season kind of being over. If Liverpool got knocked out the FA Cup, I don't know what they're trying to achieve this season, but they could get at least a back-to-back win of the FA Cup this season if they play their cards right. They've been out of this. That we've got to start talking about this as a really troubling season for them. So I don't really know how I'd define this performance. Yeah. Inconsistent is a good word, I suppose. Let's go back to that one.
Yeah, well, the game started off with, awfully for Alisson especially. Can't have given the defence much confidence with his mistake. Dave, talk us through what happened there. It's Guede's first goal for Wolves as well. He's had a pretty poor start to his time there, so he needed that, but it was gifted to him, wasn't it?
Yeah, I mean, he could probably be talking about the second goal as well. I don't really know what went on there. But yeah, I mean, we've seen it happen though, haven't we? There's been a lot of close moments over, I'd say, last 2 or 3 years where Alisson has been almost a little bit too brave on trying to play out, or, you know, doing a little Cruyff turn around attackers, and you're just like, this is going to come back and bite at some point. I mean, that's obviously the ways that they want to play and the way they want their goalkeeper to play. So it probably is going to force a couple of mistakes along the way, but we can't give him too much criticism. He's been, you know, arguably the best goalkeeper in the league for the last 2 or 3 seasons. So, but yeah, I mean, Wolves, like Miles said, I think you've got to be a little bit concerned to concede 2 goals against a team that has, you know, been quite famed for obviously struggling to score goals. And they managed to score 2, should have really been 3, arguably. But I mean, Wolves, I think Oh, yeah, there's not really that much of an argument. But I mean, Wolves, you've got to say they've looked actually quite positive the last few games, and in this game, really looked quite threatening to Liverpool. And Liverpool have just got to be concerned, really. They need to tighten up at the back. I don't know how they're going to do it. The thing is, Klopp's so stubborn that I don't know actually if he's going to change how he wants to play out the back. Look, he's always been the same, whatever team he's been at, and over the last few years. And but I just feel like, especially with their defensive problems, I don't know how they're going to navigate their way over the next couple of months until they get Van Dijk back, because they do look at sixes and sevens at times.
Even he's not had a good season, though, has he? Let's be honest.
No, that's true. But I mean, for more Wolves perspective, Miles, what would you feel if you're a Wolves fan? Because I mean, there's a feeling that it shouldn't have been called as offside, the Totti goal, which would have made it 3-2. I think the reason was that there wasn't a decent enough camera angle to say it was a goal. I
Ludicrous.
mean, that's bizarre at Anfield, isn't it?
Yeah, it's absolutely pathetic, to be honest, and I can't believe they've even had the balls to come out with that kind of comment. It's just ridiculous that at a Premier League ground, one of such high regard as well, you've got this system implemented and you can't implement it properly. To be honest, I'm very much of the mindset of there shouldn't be VAR in the FA Cup, because it's ridiculous to me that one game is judged using something that the next game isn't. It's stupid. It's
Agreed.
absolutely ridiculous. So turn it off and rely on the decision, and then you can have no arguments. But to know you've got that technology in the background that's meant to eradicate all human error, and then something like offside as well, it's cut and dry. That's not even interpretation. You either are or you aren't. And they still can't get that right in favour of Liverpool. That's so disappointing for Wolves. They will feel cheated. The other thing Wolves will feel is quite excited, though, I think. I think they've made massive progress under Lopetegui. They look such a better footballing side already. I watched them against Villa in the league the other day, obviously, and although they kind of fell apart for the last 20 minutes, there's still signs of progress, because Wolves looked like their season was going to end horribly for them before he came in. And that's an amazing appointment. Giving him time, resources, this window, bringing in Matheus Cunha is a great signing as well. Maybe not as lethal and potent as they need up front, but a wonderful player to add to your squad, definitely. I think Wolves can feel quite encouraged by where they're going. That's the main thing.
I was going to say Wolves look more positive, but they couldn't have gotten much worse, really. But how do you see Jurgen Klopp's feelings, Miles, at the minute at Liverpool? You said he doesn't look happy. I mean, he can't, can he, with results like that? But is he going to stick around for this season? Do you think he's going to see out the whole season this time?
Really can't work it out. I go back and forth over it. Liverpool are never going to sack him. And I've said on here before that we
No.
saw this period at Dortmund, and I wouldn't be massively shocked if he walked away because he felt like he wasn't up to the job. He's a very sort of, let's say, honourable coach in that sense.
Yeah.
He's brought Cody Gakpo in now. He obviously bought Nunes in the summer. He's obviously spending money to rebuild this squad. You would think he would want to stick around and prove that he can build it again, because that's the really impressive part of management. Coming in, building one successful team by spending a lot of money and shaping something that suits you is fantastic. Doing it again and again and again, like Ferguson did or Wenger did, that's what Klopp will want to do, really build a legacy. At the moment, is there any signs that he can do that? Because his reliable players are all of a sudden becoming a lot more unreliable. The fitness and age isn't on his side anymore of a lot of his playing squad, and it's a huge job. And let's not forget, we're talking about the FA Cup now, but there was another round of Premier League fixtures again, and Liverpool are still looking shaky. That is, if they don't make top four this season, after spending the kind of money they did on Nunes and still investing in the squad, ambitions of bringing in someone like Bellingham, I don't know. It's not looking good, is it? It really isn't. Because I
No.
don't know who of that top four is going to drop out at the moment, because they all look in really, really good form.
True. It's a weird one, isn't it? The FA Cup's thrown up a lot of vulnerabilities, I think, in some of these big Premier League teams. And another one I'm going to talk about now is Chelsea. I mean, they were on the ropes anyway. They've had a really rough start under Graham Potter. Dave, I mean, is he under pressure now? They've just lost 4-0 to Man City, another defeat to Man City. They're so far behind City, aren't they? And it's weird to think they beat them in the Champions League only, what, a year and a half ago or something like that. What is Chelsea's solution now, Dave? Because I think there's been arguments that Roman Abramovich would not have appointed Graham Potter. That was not his kind of appointment. And Tuchel has been chanted from the stands by the Chelsea fans. They miss him. They didn't want to get rid of him in the first place. Can Potter see it out? Will he get through this difficult period? And do you think he deserves time, Dave? There's a lot of questions there, but that's what's whirling around a lot of Chelsea fans' heads right now.
Seems that Todd Bowley thinks the solution is to buy every single player that's available on the transfer market, or every player that other teams are chasing, to take off their hands and then put into their team. I mean, at the minute, I've just seen they've been linked. Obviously, Felix, apparently they've agreed a deal with now, in principle, which for me is crazy. He's a great player. We obviously don't know whether he'll be able to do it in the Premier League, though. Chelsea 10th. Is it they're 11 points behind United in fourth?
They're about equal distance between the relegation zone, I think.
Yeah, and, you know, I just don't see what the incentive for him is to go there. He must be really desperate. It seems that Chelsea are the only team that are willing to pay the amount that Atletico want, and Arsenal and United have balked, you know, at the price that they've demanded. And they're all over the shop. You watch them play now, they're kind of devoid of all energy and structure. There's no organisation in the team. They're probably one of the least threatening teams in the league, alongside Wolves going forward. They don't look like scoring. It's actually really sad to see, to be fair, considering where they've been at, obviously the heights of over the last couple of years. You mentioned the Champions League win. Kai Havertz as well. I know obviously Antony and Darwin Nunez get a lot of mention for their price tag. How much? £75 million for Havertz. He's won them a Champions League, but he's not done a lot other than that. He's been at the club, his third season now?
In terms of Graham Potter though, Miles, where do you see this situation now? Because this game is a huge blow for Chelsea, isn't it? 4-0 in an FA Cup competition. Again, that was probably one of the few things they had going for them, was probably getting some silverware here. That's gone. And they were nowhere in the contest at all, were they? Game over by, what, half an hour?
Yeah. I think, though, there are enough extenuating circumstances, and there is a bigger picture to consider when you think about Graham Potter's future.
Yeah.
The first thing is, we're so used to Chelsea being really quick to dismiss a manager. Now, we don't know whether that's Bowley's approach. Obviously, he removed Tuchel quite quickly, but that's quite common with a new owner. They want to get their own man in. Bowley has built Chelsea's backroom around Graham Potter. He's basically gone, who did you like at Brighton? Cool, you can have them. So it'd be very odd to do that and move on from a whole project that quickly. The other thing is, if you look at Chelsea's injury list, I've never seen one with such quality. It's absolutely alarming. If you consider they're missing both Reece James and Ben Chilwell, and how much of their threat over the last year has come from those fullbacks, that's a real big risk. Having Sterling now out is huge. Kante is out. It's Loftus-Cheek came into the squad and looked decent. He's now out. Aubameyang missed this game. It's a huge list. Fofana looked like he was going to build their defence around Fofana. He's been out. So Potter needs time to get those players back in, along with bringing in the right people for him. It seemed like in the summer, and Dave mentioned it now for the January window, looks like they'll do quite similar. They basically bought whoever was available. I talked about it with Villa. That's not a coherent plan that doesn't build a squad. Look at Chelsea's forward line. Exactly the same thing as I said about Villa. There's no strategy there. They don't complement each other. They got rid of all of their number nines and brought in Aubameyang. I'm not sure what good it would do Chelsea to remove Potter, to be totally honest, at this stage. We've seen he's a quality manager.
Yeah.
We've seen he's capable of things in the Premier League. And actually, do we expect much more of Chelsea right now than that kind of loss against Man City? Look at Man City's bench that they were able to put out. Haaland, Cancelo, Gundogan, De Bruyne, I think Ruben Diaz was on there. Grealish didn't even make the squad. He was 100 million. That depth, Chelsea cannot compete with that right now. They can financially, but their squad doesn't have that in it, especially with those injuries on top. So I do think you can't lay everything at Potter's door. There are things that he'll need to readdress, but given a couple of transfer windows, given his squad back to full fitness, that will happen. It's just whether Chelsea will hold on for long enough to do that, because I think they're probably out of the top four race already. So what's the point? Just give Potter this season. and try again next year. That I honestly think that unless they get really embarrassed in the next round of the Champions League, there's no reason you'd sack Potter.
Yeah, I think Chelsea of old definitely would have been ready to do that now. I think this is the time where they would have acted. But yeah, this is the like you said, the investment in Potter as a person and his backroom staff seems like they've got him in mind for the long haul. If not the end of the season, then hopefully beyond that. So I think he deserves a bit of slack. And I think there's a statistic about Reece James's influence on this Chelsea team in terms of their points won in the few games he played at the start of the season. Since he's been out of the team, they've barely got any points on the board at all. I don't know if that's down to the change of manager, but he's such an attacking threat for them as well. So bear that in mind.
I think I saw that if Ben Chilwell and Reece James start a game, Chelsea win 80% of them or something ridiculous. and it's dropped to, I can't even remember what I read the other day, what it is at the moment, but it's absolutely stunning the influence that has. But it's not a surprise because then your backup options are Aspilicueta, who, as wonderful as a servant he's been to Chelsea, it's a completely different player to Reece James. Nowhere near the attacking threat that Reece James has, or the fitness, or the mobility. And Cucurella, who, oh, this looks like it was the wrong move, doesn't it? He should have gone to City when he had the choice, because that would have been way better for him, clearly.
Yeah, there's a few players for Chelsea that we could reel off that have just been, I don't know, spent big money on and not really lived up to it. And in hindsight, I know it's a wonderful thing. Look like, yeah, they look like a massive overpayment at the wrong stage of their career. So not even Graham Potter signings either. Let's kind of make that clear. So it would be interesting to see what kind of players Potter would bring in, given the resources that Tuchel had.
Yeah.
Whether we'll get the chance to see that, who knows, but I really hope so. I think most football fans, most neutrals hope so too, because I think he's one of the few bright English coaches at all. So yeah, we need to see them succeed really when given the chance. But a word on City, Dave. They were ruthless, weren't they? And in a team that contained Riyad Mahrez, who's normally not a regular starter, he played really well again. Julian Alvarez, who had a great World Cup, hit the ground running still, didn't he, in this competition too. They played brilliantly. And I think the Phil Foden goal especially was so Man City, so Guardiola. It's great to watch. And you can't argue with some of the performances they put on, no matter who's in front of them, really, can you?
Yeah, I think that's definitely some of the best attacking play I've seen them do for actually for quite a few weeks now. Sounds crazy, but they've not been as easy on the eye as they have been early on in the season. Obviously, they've been a little bit inconsistent in a couple of matches, but that did look like the Man City that we know. And they just made it look so easy at times. You mentioned there Riyad Mahrez. I think he really enjoys playing against Chelsea. He seems to often get on the score sheet against them. But I just felt that there were a joy to watch in this game. I thought Phil Foden, was, outstanding. It's just crazy how they can just bring these players in and they, they perform. There's no sulking. They know what the demands of, what's asked of them, and just have the consistency that they do, and everyone obviously contributes. Like you mentioned, the first goal from Mahrez on the free kick was brilliant. Took a slight deflection, but it looked like it was probably still going in anyway. But you can only admire them. And pains me to say as a United fan, but they were definitely at their best in moments. And it was over. It was done by half-time, wasn't it? They were just kind of in second gear for the majority of the second half. Yeah.
I'd hate to be City's next opponent. Anyway, who's that again?
Yeah.
Easy. That's about all we've got time to talk about now, really, because it's such a jam-packed, action-packed third round of FA Cup action. Best of the rest then, guys. I mean, for me, I really enjoyed Cardiff-Leeds. I thought that was a really entertaining game. And that Luis Suarez-style handball sending off as well was hilarious, because it's so blatant to see things like that happen. So that, for me, is kind of the highlight other than what we talked about. I thought that was a really entertaining game. It felt like a championship game, no disrespect to Leeds, but that is a kind of game that was played about 2-3 years ago in the championship, wasn't it? Mars, what about for you? Any other games stick out for you that you want to mention?
Okay, so imagine the best football game you could possibly think of. You'd probably have loads of goals, let's say 7 goals, 4-3, so it's quite even as well. You have red card, penalty, direct free kick goal, an underdog winning. It's a Hollywood story. You've got to rate Wrexham knocking out championship Coventry, surely. I mean, I'm a massive It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia fan, so just seeing Ron McElhenney look happy is brilliant. And seeing the investment that those two have in the club, the community, the culture around it. It's brilliant. Watching him tweet about the joy of the FA Cup is just fantastic. I just wish they weren't sponsored by TikTok. That's the only thing that brings it down for me, to be honest. But that was amazing, surely. And actually, there was chances for Coventry to level it up or even take the tie. I think they hit the woodwork three times and they had a chance from a corner in the last sort of minute. It's brilliant. What a great game of football that was.
Yeah, there were quite a few entertaining games, weren't there, that were really the epitome of the third round of the FA Cup. Dave, anything else stand out for you, mate?
David De Gea.
I think the one, well, I mean, you could speak of some comedic goalkeeping. There was some bad goalkeeping in the Wrexham game as well. But I think probably one what we've not spoken about is obviously Sheffield Wednesday beating Newcastle. Mm. One of the goals that Sheffield Wednesday scored, this goes to your argument earlier about VAR, Miles, was offside. And obviously they don't have the VAR at Hillsborough, so obviously drama to see them. You know, to see these teams. Obviously, they're not a small team. Obviously, Sheffield Wednesday, really big fan base, and just to see them take these scalps is just what makes the FA Cup. Sheffield Wednesday just had the resilience to kind of churn the result out.
Yeah, it's been a really interesting third round. And we could go on and on, but that's our pick of the bunch. Next time we talk on the pod next week, we will have all the action of the Carabao Cup quarterfinals to pick through. Also, the Manchester Derby will be happening next weekend. So, yeah, that's probably the big one for me and you, Dave. And until then, thanks, guys. And thank you again for joining us. Please do hit subscribe if you are watching this. Enjoy what you're listening to. We're really trying to grow this year on YouTube and on audio channels as well. So if you're listening or watching, wherever you are, just hit a follow or a like or a subscribe. That'd be a massive, massive help. Until then, guys, thanks a lot.
Thanks, man.
See you later.
See you next time.